A very good morning. On behalf of Teach 613, we welcome you to Take 10 for Talmud. Rosh Hashanah Yud Gimel, Rosh Hashanah 13a, pagination page 25. We're going to start on the facing page, though, so we're starting on Rosh Hashanah Yud Beis Amid Beis 12b, pagination 24, about 8 lines from the bottom. Mishetitzmach is the first word on the line. Our topic over here is regarding grain that grows and trying to clarify which year it should be tithed with. So our Mishnah in the beginning of the Masechta told us that there is a cutoff date in the year called Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, and anything that's defined as produce of before Rosh Hashanah is going to be tithed with that produce of before Rosh Hashanah, and anything Rosh Hashanah and on is considered the new produce, and it's going to be tithed with that. If one were to try to tithe from last year on this year or vice versa, it would not. That's not the way Shana b'Shana, it has to be done year for year, each tithe done by its year. Now, the Gemara tells us a very unique consideration. What does it mean exactly that it's produce of the first year or that it's produce of the new year? Does it go by when it grew? Does it go by when it got picked? So the statement over here is, Hatevua vahazesim, regarding grain and olives, Misheyaviu shlish, from the time that it has a third of its growth potential, that's considered which year it is. In the words of Rashi, Miss Asrin, they're going to be tithed Achashana Shehigiyu Bo Lishlish Bishulam, from the year in which they reach a third of their completion. And the Gemara, one line later, towards the end of the line in the abbreviation, asks, Minohani Mili, how do you know this rule that these products should follow a third of their growth, should be the definition of which year they are attributed to? And the Gemara brings a fascinating insight, a source, which actually helps us in understanding a very enigmatic pasuk in Chumash Devarim. The Gemara tells us, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yechanan, Umata ba Mishmei Rav Yosi Aglili, Amar Kra, it's based on a pasuk. Miket Sheva Shonim, it'll be the end of 7 years, B'moed Shnas HaShemita, it will be Shemita, B'chag HaSukos, and it will be Sukkos. The pasuk is referring to the mitzvah of Hakel, of gathering the Jewish people in Yerushalayim by Sukkos that follows Shemitah. So the Gemara asks, Shnas HaShemitah Maya Vidite, in what way is it the year of Shemitah? B'chag HaSukkos, if it's Sukkos, Sheminis Hi, it's the 8th year. It's not Shemitah anymore. Elalom Aloch, what is it coming to tell you? Kol tevua shehivya shalish b'shevius, that grain that fulfilled a third of its growth during Shemitah, lefnei Rosh Hashanah, before Rosh Hashanah changed it to the 8th year, atanoig bo minig shevius b'sheminis, you have to deal with it as produce of Shemitah, even though it is now being harvested on Sukkos of, or Sukkos time, of the 8th year. So even though now it's completed and it's the eighth year, nevertheless, it's considered Shemitah. So again, the Gemara's question was, how could it be Shemitah if it's Sukkos, the beginning of the eighth year? And the Gemara is answering, there's a certain amount of residual attribution to Shemitah, in that something that grew a third during Shemitah, you have to pay attention to it when it finally gets harvested, even though it's the eighth year, that residual nature, it's Shemitah produce. Today happens to be the day that our local VAD determined that no one has to any longer be concerned with Chomet She'Avar Alav HaPesach. It's sufficiently after the date of Pesach that if a Jew would have owned Chametz, one of the suppliers, etc. So at this point, the produce from after Pesach is already mixed in sufficiently and you no longer have to worry. So Chametz She'Avar Alav HaPesach is on my mind. It's an example of this. Pesach is gone. You're allowed to eat chametz. But there's some considerations, residual nature, which you still have to pay attention to the laws of Pesach, to the laws of chametz. Is this item acceptable for use? Because perhaps its condition during the time of prohibition was such that it is still an item that I have to be concerned with. So in our Gemara, it's an issue of Shemitah. This is Shemitah produce. In my example, I'm talking about Chomet She'Avar Alav HaPesach, that during Pesach it was forbidden, but afterwards one would think it's over. And the answer is, sometimes there's a residual property to the prohibition and to the produce. Now, just to observe that the classic answer to the Gemara's question over here is a phenomenal hashkafic insight. The Gemara is saying, it's the eighth year. It's not Shemitah anymore. Why are you calling it Shemitah? And the answer hashkafically is that a person is on a high from Shemitah, and then he goes in to Yomim Noraim time, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos, and they were Ola L'Regel. They went to Yerushalayim for Sukkos. So a person's still on a high, so it still has the right to be called the Shnas HaShemitah season, the season of Shemitah. Contrast that, for example, with a famous vort that's said regarding Yom Kippur. We know that on Yom Kippur we recite Baruch Shem Kibon Machoso Le'olam Va'ed aloud, but when it comes Ma'ariv, following Yom Kippur, we recite Baruch Shem Kibon Machoso Le'olam Va'ed quietly. The question is why? We're still fasting. It's still like almost Yom Kippur. And the joke answer is, yes, but if a person davens Ma'ariv quickly, rushing to be able to eat, and all that's on his mind is that Yom Kippur is over, I can go back to being human, so then that elevated status of Baruch Shem Kavod Machoso Le'olam Va'ed, because during Yom Kippur we're like angels, is no longer with us if you're davening Ma'ariv like that. So that's the hashkafic perspective, but our Gemara is focused on a very halachic perspective that Sukkos is a time when a person might still be harvesting. During the Sukkos season, a person might still be harvesting Shemitah produce. What does this have to do with us regarding the tithe and regarding which year the produce should be attributed to? So let's look at today's daf on the fifth line. V'kim lehu l'rabbanon, and the rabbis understood the chol tevua shaniktzura bechag, that if grain is harvested in the sukkah season, in that time of year, b'yadua shehivia shalish lefnei Rosh Hashanah, then we know that it's already a third developed Rosh Hashanah time. V'kakari le'betzeis Hashanah. And it's called the end of the year. So we are being told over here that a third before Rosh Hashanah, a third of development of the produce before Rosh Hashanah attributes it to that year. It will be considered Shemitah produce if we're coming from a Shemitah year. And it will, on very simple level, be considered produce of that year as far as tithing goes, even though by now we're already on into a new year. The Gemara does mention another nuance here that is very important for our style of getting Daf Yomi highlights. Omale Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rav Zeira Vekim Luhu L'Rabbanan Ben Shlish L'Pachas Mishlish. Did the rabbis really understand the difference between a third and less than a third? So precise was their measure. Omar Lei, and he answered to him, Lav Aminalach, haven't I told you? Lo Topik Nafshach, Levar Mehilchasa, don't let these types of things worry you. Komides Chachamim Kenhu. That's correct. That's the way Chazal were. They were able to bring things down to absolute precision. For example, Be'arboim Sahu Tovel, Be'arboim Sahu Chosar Kartov, Enayachal Litval Bohin. When Chazal assessed what the Pasuk meant when it said a mikvah, referring to water that a person can immerse themselves in, they assessed it. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah, Arboim Sah, the exact measure for a mikvah. The Torah says the amount that you could immerse in. But Chazal assessed it at 40 Sah precisely. Now, on some topics, we say that Chazal had a Mesorah. But on other topics, it's not that Chazal had a Mesorah, a tradition on it, and really it's Halach L'Moshe Misinai. But on some topics, we actually say that the Torah gave the hint, and it was up to Chazal to calculate and figure out precisely what the number that the Torah was indicating actually is. Certainly, there are a lot of hints, but the actual ruling was up to Chazal. What's interesting is that today, we often confront all kinds of sfeikos and machlokes, and it becomes questionable to us how to be so precise, whereas Chazal were able to be absolutely precise. Now, some of that is based on their proficiency, both in Torah and in general knowledge. But another factor that they had working in their favor is that the Torah does say that you should follow the Sanhedrin's ruling. And therefore, even if there would be a machlokes after all the calculations and all the assessments, if there was a machlokes, they had the advantage of something called a Sanhedrin. And they could debate it, benefit from the wisdom of all, and when they were all finished debating, they could rule. And the Torah says that the ruling of Sanhedrin is binding. And therefore, when the Gemara refers back and says, Chazal were able to come up with precise measures, such as a third before Rosh Hashanah, or 40 saw for a mikvah, this is what they're referring to, absolute precision, as a result of a Sanhedrin. Yashikoach.